Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Dark Witch Magic by Lynn South and Michael Anderley. Narrated by Holly Adams. Chapter 1. Milford, Illinois, Today. It was after midnight. Catherine Troy sat at the kitchen table in her farmhouse, rereading the last 3 months of case files. The only lights in the room were the electronic glow of her laptop and the soft light from the half-moon that filtered through the windows. As she read, she sipped her black and bitter tea. It was penance, this reading and rereading. She should have been out there hunting down the vampires who killed her daughter Jess. But she wasn't. Every lead they had was stone cold. From a physiological perspective, vampires didn't need sleep. But Kat found it beneficial to follow a human sleep schedule as much as possible. Even with a rigid routine, the investigation workload made the days and nights blur together. It was disorienting, and sometimes made it difficult to think straight. It wasn't only the work, though. She hadn't been able to rest for weeks because of the internal countdown running in her head. Anticipation was a powerful thing. It could be motivation on great days when you felt rosy and happy and had everything to look forward to. It could also be torture when your plans went to shit and all you wanted to do was curl up in a ball and hide from the world. At the moment, it was the latter, because the countdown was over and the day she'd been dreading had arrived. The first birthday without Jess. She would have been 14. The date changed on her phone at the stroke of midnight, and the reminder popped up. Kat could have deleted it, but that would have felt like erasing her daughter. She couldn't do it. There it stayed, a constant reminder of what she'd lost. With a heavy heart, Kat got up from the table and went to Jess's room. Kat had kept it as Jess left it, right down to the t-shirt and jeans discarded on the floor after she'd changed into her pajamas on that last night. Still, it was more a shrine now, a memorial to her short life than a teenager's bedroom. She had insisted that when anyone cleaned the room, they replaced everything in its exact spot. Sometimes, pretending that Jess was away at summer camp was easier. If her room looked the same as it always had, Kat could imagine she could walk through the door all tanned and happy at any moment. As she stood in the doorway, looking at Jess's empty bed, a lump formed in her throat and unshed tears stung her eyes. It was times like this when she wished she could turn off her emotions like a faucet, but that would be a terrible idea. Vampires who shut off their emotions became little more than killing machines, void of all empathy and remorse. They were the ones who gave their species a bad name. The vampires she hunted. She allowed herself to feel the pain, to grieve for her daughter, even though it tore her apart every single time. She sat on the edge of the unmade bed and took in the room. Jess had tucked pictures of herself and her friends into the ribbons of a rainbow-colored fabric photo board she had made. On the dresser was a small framed photo of Kat and Jess, taken a few months before she died. They were laughing and carefree in it, oblivious to the darkness closing around them. Her stuffed animals, remnants of childhood, lined the shelves. Her favorite was a soft plush unicorn with a rainbow mane and tail. It had been a gift from Kat on Jess's 5th birthday, and she'd refused to part with it as she outgrew it. Memories drenched every inch of the room, and as Kat sat there, they all flooded back. The first time Jess rode a bike without training wheels, her elementary school graduation, her first dance recital. So many happy memories. It was too much, and Kat was crying before she could stop herself. She cried until she had no tears left and her throat was raw. Grief made a mockery of immortality. Anyone who said time healed all wounds was full of shit and had never been a vampire.
For Kat, time could be a cruel, never-ending loop that played out the same way over and over and over, like a horrible, twisted version of Groundhog Day. The only difference was that she could see the pain getting worse, not better, with each passing year. She couldn't stay in here any longer. She had to get out. She went back downstairs to the kitchen, poured a glass of blood, and took it outside onto the back porch. She needed fresh air. Being outside always cleared her head. She sat in her usual chair. It was a beautiful night. The sky was clear, allowing the stars to glow. The half-moon cast a soft silver light over her surroundings. It was the kind of night that Jess would have loved. She would have looked up at the stars and dreamed about her future. Still, Kat couldn't help but feel a sense of foreboding. It began with the werewolf attacks 3 months ago. There was something in the air, something dark and evil. It was only a matter of time before Cain Abrams replaced his missing witches and resumed the process of turning werewolves without a full moon. When he did, there would be hell to pay. He was out there somewhere, biding his time, waiting for the perfect opportunity to strike. When he did, Kat would be ready. There was a noise from inside the house, footsteps on the stairs, and Ruby appeared in the doorway. At least she wasn't alone in her grief. She had Ruby. "Hey." She looked at Kat. She wore her thick flannel robe over her pajamas and held a cup of tea in her hand. "I knew you wouldn't be able to sleep tonight." Kat shook her head and took a sip of blood. "It's her birthday." Ruby sat in the chair next to her. She shivered against the chill in the air and pulled her robe tighter around her.
"Yeah, it is."
Kat grabbed a wool blanket from a storage chest and wrapped it around Ruby's shoulders.
"Thanks."
She smiled in gratitude.
"I'm getting too old for this."
"You're not old. You're a familiar, and you're supposed to be impervious to cold."
"Yeah, well, the cold might not bother the demon inside me, but the meat suit I'm wearing is definitely bothered. So,
thanks for the blanket." They sat in silence for a long time, lost in their thoughts. Kat stared up at the stars, searching for some measure of peace. It was impossible. There was too much pain, too much loss. The autumn air was crisp, and the scent of the straw covering the plant beds, ready for their winter slumber, hung heavy around them. It reminded her of the times they'd gone apple picking together. Jess loved apples, especially when they made pies or cider to reward their labor. Kat broke the silence. "Do you ever wonder what she would have been like when she came into her powers?"
"All the time."
The words caught in Ruby's throat, and she sipped her tea to clear it.
"She would have been a force to be reckoned with, that's for sure. She started sensing supernaturals when she was in grammar school. We were so sure she was a prodigy, even then."
"She was already a force of nature." Kat's voice was full of pride. "She had more strength, resolve, and compassion in her little finger than most people have in their whole bodies." Ruby chuckled and glanced at her as she shifted in her seat. She pulled the blanket tighter, as though physically trying to shield herself from the memories.
"Strength and resolve? You mean headstrong and stubborn.
You make it sound like a bad thing.
You know better than anyone how Jess could be. Or have you forgotten that last doozy of a fight y'all had over that Mitchell boy she wanted to date? The one who caught me doing a spell in the garden?"
"It took weeks for the house to stop shaking every time we looked at each other. I kept telling her that kid only wanted to date her to find out if you were a witch."
"Yeah, well, you're lucky she didn't set fire to your bedroom when you put your foot down and refused to let her date him."
"Oh, she wanted to, that's for sure." Kat laughed until it turned into a coughing fit. After she caught her breath, she sighed. "When she lit the candles on the dining room table with a wave, It was startling.
She did more than light those candles. She turned them into blowtorches. There are still scorch marks on the dining room ceiling.
Ruby shook her head and took another sip of tea.
That girl was something else. I thought you were going to lose your mind.
Jess had been furious about her mother's refusal to let her date Mitchell and pouted for days. In the last argument, Jess stormed around the dining room, raging over the perceived injustice. Her ice-blue eyes turned fiery red at one point, and when she balled her fists, the candles on the table lit with a whoosh that threatened to catch the entire room on fire. It took both Kat and Ruby to put the flames out. In the end, Jess didn't get to date Mitchell, but she got her own room. The episode had been a frightening display of power from the usually gentle Jess. Ruby had been scared, her eyes wide with shock as she stared at the girl. Kat was confused and alarmed by her daughter's apparent powers. She still wasn't sure how Jess had pulled it off. For the life of me, I can't figure out how she started manifesting magical abilities. Dampirs don't have magic. I expected her to beg me to let her drink blood so she could ramp up her athletic abilities for soccer or something. Magic was the last thing I expected from her.
She tried to get you to bend the no blood before you're 16 rule on more than one occasion, too. It's a teenager's job to test all parental rules. You know that.
I do. But as her mother, it was my job to keep her safe. Drinking blood is too dangerous for any dampier not mature enough to handle it.
With great power comes great responsibility, I guess.
Kat chuckled. Thanks, Uncle Ben, but she wasn't a secret superhero. The magic thing is bizarre. She shouldn't have had magical abilities, yet she was born with that power. I have no idea where it came from.
Maybe it was a latent ability that only manifested under extreme stress. Not to mention, the closer she got to 16, the more her vampire side would assert itself. It's why you trained her to manage it.
The vampire side, yes. I knew how to handle that. But witchcraft? Kat sighed. That's a whole different ballgame. Ruby frowned.
Maybe she got it from her father's side. You never knew what powers he...
I'm going to stop you right there. Discussing Jess's father is not on the agenda for tonight. That's a cauldron of trouble I do not want to stir.
All right, all right.
Ruby held her hands up in surrender.
No need to get your dander up. We'll leave that alone for now.
Thank you. Kat sipped more blood, then set the glass down with a clatter. She glanced at Ruby and noticed her strange, uneasy expression. It was the same mix of apprehension and panic she'd shown during the candle incident. There had been a damn good reason for Ruby's reaction, but even the memory of the event provoked the same level of fear. Ruby was holding something back. This usually meant a dark secret swirling in her brain that she was afraid to share. What? Ruby shook it off.
Nothing. Just listening to you is all. And it's cold out here.
Kat tilted her head and peered at Ruby, who fidgeted with the edge of her wool blanket and wouldn't meet Kat's gaze. Do you know something I don't?
No. I know it would be a good idea to head back inside before we both turn into popsicles.
All right. Kat stood. I want you to remember something, okay? Ruby nodded and clutched the blanket around her shoulders. You can tell me anything, no matter how dark.
I know nothing. I swear it.
Ruby stood. Her gentle smile looked forced. You're a terrible liar.
And you're a pain in the ass. Does that make us even?
No. But if you change your mind and decide to spill the beans, let me know. We promised not to keep secrets from each other. Ruby changed the subject.
I have an idea. Today is going to be a bad day. No way around that. It comes with the territory of anniversaries after a loss. Since this is the first birthday since Jess died, it's going to be extra tough. I think we should do something fun.
What did you have in mind?
We keep the birthday breakfast extravaganza tradition going.
Cat loved the idea and knew Jess would love it too. You know I love breakfast foods as much as the next vampire with a Belgian waffle addiction.
Cat followed Ruby inside.
But it sure sounds more like an excuse to eat our feelings than anything else. Besides, it's the middle of the night. Breakfast is hours away.
We're not going back to sleep, and you know it. Besides, if Jess is looking down on us today, she would be happy to see us celebrating her birthday instead of moping around. We'll have to forego the balloons, streamers, and confetti since someone didn't have the foresight to buy any. But I think we can make do.
You're right. Jess would love it. They stepped into the warm kitchen.
It's settled, then. I'll start on the waffles, and you can handle the bacon.
The birthday breakfast extravaganza had been a family tradition since Jess was a little girl. It had started as a way of celebrating her daughter's special day, but at Jess's insistence, it developed into a ritual to kick off each of their special days. Within the hour, there was a magnificent spread of breakfast foods. Waffles, bacon, eggs, sausage, fruit, and a few leftover scones from the bakery. Ruby even pulled out the champagne flutes to serve orange juice. Jess had always insisted.
Cat settled into her seat.
How are we going to eat all this? We have enough food to feed a small army.
She started with a scone, spreading the clotted cream first, then the jam, and moved on to the bacon.
We'll start on it and put the rest in the fridge for later.
Ruby didn't look up from her plate.
No sense letting all this good food go to waste.
As they ate, Cat watched Ruby from the corner of her eye. She was determined to find out what was going on in her stubborn and secretive head, even if she had to pry it out with a crowbar. She sensed Ruby was equally determined to keep whatever secret she was hiding close to her chest. The longer the meal went on, the more Cat realized she would not get anything out of her friend today. Sated, Ruby pushed her plate away.
That was fantastic. I'm stuffed.
Me too. Cat leaned back in her chair and rubbed her stomach, which was on the verge of being uncomfortably full. I don't think I'll be able to move for a week, but I have to go to the training center today, so I guess I'll suffer through it. I should get back to the case files, though.
I'll clean up here.
Ruby stacked the plates and gathered the dirty silverware.
You get back to work.
Cat stood and stretched.
Thanks. I owe you one.
Don't worry about it.
Ruby waved her off.
Go catch those big bad werewolves. Make the world safe for humanity again.
Cat stopped and looked at her friend for a long moment.
We're not only fighting werewolves. We're fighting my asshole brother who has leveraged these werewolves as his weapons to gain power. Who knows what else he has up his ridiculously overpriced Italian suit sleeve?
I know. I have faith in you. You'll find a way to stop him.
I'm not only going to stop him. I'm going to destroy him.
Rage swelled inside Cat as she spoke. The thought of Kane's smug face, or worse, his sickeningly sweet voice when he tried to manipulate and control her, made her wish she had killed him already. She'd had so many chances.
I'm going to make him beg for death.
Back in the old days, she would have already suited up and been on her way to kick some serious ass. For this, she had to be strategic. She wasn't pursuing a random, out-of-control vampire, risking exposing the entire supernatural community by tearing people apart with throngs of witnesses looking on. She was hunting her brother, a cold, calculating sociopath vampire. If they were right about his plans, he was on the verge of controlling the world's werewolf population and, by extension, the supernatural and human worlds. If Cat failed, Cain would become the most powerful being on the planet, an unstoppable, fiendish force of darkness bent on destruction and chaos. The thought was too much to bear. She had to be smart and calculating. She had to uncover his weaknesses and exploit them until he was nothing but dust beneath her boots. And she would enjoy every second of it.
Ruby squinted at her.
I know that look. What else are you planning?
He made my sweet girl collateral damage in his sick and twisted power game. From today on, the Enforcer will hunt down anyone who had a hand in her death, starting with whoever poisoned the food Kane intended for me. Even if it means turning off my emotions, I won't stop until they're all dead. My brother will regret the day he turned vampire so he could chase me down.
Ruby's shock was palpable.
You'd turn off your emotions? If I recall, the last time you went on a rampage like this time will be different.
I'm not that impulsive, hot-headed baby vampire anymore. I'm the Enforcer. I always get justice.
You mean revenge?
Ruby twisted a tea towel in her hands.
Kat sensed she was on the verge of getting one of Ruby's lectures and was in no mood for it. It's the same thing. Kat refilled her champagne flute with blood instead of orange juice and headed toward her bedroom. Same outcome. In this case, anyway. It will rid this world of literal monsters who think they can get away with murder, and Kane will be one step closer to his comeuppance.
Justice and revenge are two very different things.
Ruby's voice followed her up the stairs.
The first one might bring peace if you can move forward afterward. The second one can destroy you as well as those you target. How will you know when enough is enough?
Kat turned and leveled a cold, hard stare at her friend. My daughter is dead because of Cain. There will never be enough revenge to satisfy me.
After Kat was gone, Ruby grabbed her cell phone and tapped out a message to Azurez. She hated the self-righteous windbag, but 14 years ago, they had struck a deal to keep Kat and her unborn child safe. This was before Kat went into hiding. Their already fraught partnership escalated into a dramatic clash when they vehemently disagreed about what it would take to keep them safe. Against Ruby's advice and better judgment, and after many screaming matches arguing her case, Oz hired witches to cast spells on Kat and her daughter. Which meant there were secrets. Because to protect the spells from compromise, they couldn't allow Kat to remember any of it. When Kat found out what her two best friends had done, they'd be lucky if they didn't end up on her enemies list. Ruby only hoped that when the truth came out, Kat would understand they had done it from a place of love and the desire to protect. It took several tries to type out what she wanted to say. She wanted to curse him out for being an arrogant jerk, but that wouldn't help the situation, so she deleted the opener that read, "You fucking bastards, you got us into this mess, now you need to get us out." Instead, she stuck to the facts of the situation. Kat's talking about shutting off her emotions so she can bring Kane down. If that happens, we could lose her to darkness forever. We can't let her go after him without knowing everything. We have to tell her. Now. Ruby hit send and downed the rest of her orange juice. After a moment, she refilled the flute with Chardonnay. If Oz couldn't see her logic, she'd have one hell of a fight on her hands. But she was ready. After what happened to Jess, she'd never let her best friend face down her bastard of a brother without being prepared for what he would throw at her. And if Oz tried to stop her from telling Kat the truth, he would have two enemies to worry about.
Chapter 2. Chicago. Oz froze when he saw Ruby's message. It was amazing how she could sound bossy and concerned in the same breath. He heard her fear and anxiety as clearly as if she stood nose to nose with him. Ruby was stubborn, and from the day the spells were cast, she had never let go of her fury toward him. Ruby was right. They would need to come clean with Kat. They couldn't keep her true nature a secret forever. It didn't mean now was the right time to let that cat out of the bag. Oz also knew he couldn't stop Ruby from confessing everything to Kat if she was dead set on doing it. He would need to make her see reason and let him convince Kat to give up the idea of turning off her humanity before they had to say a word about their secret bargain. If Kat followed through on her knee-jerk impulse, hundreds of innocent lives would be at risk. Oz had been there the first time Kat turned off her emotions. It wasn't an experience he wanted to repeat. Ever. Oz stepped outside and went to the chauffeured car waiting to take him to the training center. The crisp autumn air reminded him of that November day in Rome when he'd first met Catherine Troy. He had no idea then how much his undead life was about to change. Rome, November, 43 BCE. The rain had stopped. Oz cautiously navigated the cobblestone streets of Rome, which were slick with mud and refuse. The last thing he needed was to slip and fall on his ass in front of all these people. He cursed under his breath as he sidestepped a puddle that smelled of piss. The area near the Basilica Julia teemed with people. Men and women, rich and poor, went about their day. The men gathered in groups, talking and gesturing as they debated the outcomes of legal cases from the civil courts within the basilica, or conferred about the latest news from the Senate. The women gossiped and laughed as they went about their shopping, their arms laden with baskets of textiles or bread, cheese, and fruit. Oz had been in Rome for less than a day and was already tired of the city. He not only hated politics, which seemed to be the only topic of conversation, but he missed the wide open spaces of his home in Hispania and his small but loyal group of vampire progeny. He'd turned almost a dozen people in the last 6 months and felt the burden and obligations of their all-consuming need for his constant guidance and support. His sire, Marcus Vorenus, had summoned him to Rome with a sense of urgency that Oz couldn't ignore. Marcus had never gone for grandiose displays of power or affection. He'd always been a fair and just father. If he required Oz's presence, there was a damn good reason for it. Still, Oz couldn't imagine what had brought Marcus back to this city. He had fled 10 years earlier when a human rival discovered his true nature and set an unruly local mob on him. It was common sense for a vampire to wait until a previous generation had died in an old haunt before returning. That way, there was no risk of being recognized. Oz made his way through the crush of people to the entrance of the baths. He paid the boy who took his cloaks and followed the sound of voices to a small, private caldarium. Marcus was inside, seated on a stone bench near the far wall. Two of his most trusted progeny, Gaius and Valerius, flanked him. The three vampires stood out like crows among finches. They were tall, with Marcus being the tallest at 6.5 feet. They shared the same dark hair, although gray liberally sprinkled his father's, and the same piercing blue eyes. It was their bearing that set them apart. They carried themselves with the confidence and ease of predators among prey. "Father, I am here as you requested." Oz bowed his head in a respectful nod.
"Oz, my most faithful and loyal son."
Marcus rose and opened his arms wide. It was an unexpected gesture. He wasn't prone to lavish displays of affection, but he enveloped Oz in a crushing embrace.
"It is good to see you."
Oz awkwardly patted his father on the back before extricating himself. Gaius and Valerius remained standing behind their sire like silent sentinels, and he saw their amusement at his discomfort. There had always been a mild rivalry between Oz and the two brothers. They were older than he was by at least 100 years and had always considered him the young blood of the group. They weren't malicious about it, but they weren't happy about his special relationship with Marcus either.
"What brings you back to Rome?" Oz asked. "It seems an unusual choice, given your history here." "Yes, well."
Marcus's face softened, and he gestured for Oz to sit next to him on the bench.
"There are some matters that require my attention. Family matters, you might say."
Oz frowned. He knew his father had been married once long ago, But his wife and child had died in a fire before he was turned. As far as Oz knew, he had...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?